It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know, it always seems like it works out this way. Got a good program lined up. Good energy. Ready to roll. And then, meh, nothing. Well, obviously, I'm 30 minutes late to the microphone. But there's a reason for that. And no, it's not because Agnes had to chase me inside with an iron skillet to get me out of the lovely, partly cloudy afternoon. No. This one's on Microsoft. Yeesh. Some kind of update went through, and I know nobody wants to hear about the inside baseball of how this program gets out and onto the interweb tubes. But just the same, it'll make me feel better to talk about it. We've got interfaces that connect to the various stream servers. And Microsoft's update went through, and it's done this before, but never with the streaming interface. It's made my imaging, music, and stuff like that go away, completely forgotten out of the app that's running it. It has ditched my Skype credentials from time to time. But it's never affected the streaming interface. Well, this time it did. And that when you have, and I was trying to get connected. I was actually, you know, I was in here. I was ready to go. 5 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. When this starts. And I pressed the little magic button to send the stream up to the interweb tubes and nothing. Cannot resolve host name. And I started communicating with Brother Deacon Asa to let him know that something was squirrely here. And he said, streaming credentials okay? And I said, no reason they shouldn't be. But just because Brother Deacon Asa mentioned it, I went and looked. And you know what? I didn't have any streaming credentials anymore. They were all gone. Thanks to those playful folks at Microsoft. Gosh. Now, this would be a good time for me to remind folks, don't send me emails about Apple or about iOS or about OS whatever ranch dressing or Android or anything else or Linux. Don't. Because as poorly as this worked today, this works sometimes. But that's what occasioned the last hour of sheer madness. And completely, because, you know, even I get to be a diva once in a while. God damn it, there I was, all ready. And I'm ready for my close-up, Max. Yeah. But we got the program on the air. Brother Deacon Asa and me, not me and that mouse in my pocket. No, we got the program on the air. I'm happy about that. And by the way, for anyone wondering, this is the horn. Headon.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that happens when the program's live. And we got a good group in there right now. This is a great time, if you've never been in the chat room before, to introduce yourself to some of the regulars. Because Anatole's there, and Jimmy's there, and Lou's there, and Otto DeShot is there, Ralphs is there, Roger in Oregon, Squeaky, Stockton Larry, Texas T, Tim O, Warrior Witch, all there. And just waiting, just waiting to greet you, especially if you're a noob. Because, you know, we don't have any hazing or goat riding or climbing a greased pole, flagpole or anything. Just come on by. It's a good time. And every program here begins with gratitude, because this program would not exist save for your determination that it exists. So I have happy news to report. Khalil wiped out the last of the challenge last night. And thank you to Paul. Thank you to Catherine. Thank you to Dave and Thomas. Thank you to Scott in San Diego, as promised yesterday. And thank you to Charlene, who there was a challenge within a challenge yesterday. And so Bruce's memorial challenge got met. And that's a great way to start the month. So that leaves us on this fourth day of October. Really, am I getting ahead of myself? On this fourth day of August, with just a $200 fundraising goal. If we can come up with that, we'll be righteous. So 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12.50, or 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13. And we'll take that half penny and put it into Agnes's Olympic-sized, kidney-shaped swimming pool, hot tub fund. Yeah, how's that? Yeah. The PayPal interface is over at headon.live. That's where you can also sign up to be a subscriber, which would be wonderful. Someday we'll have all 4,000 $10 a month subscribers, and most of this will go away, this talking about fundraising. And won't that be a glorious, glorious day? But it's not here yet. So in addition to our Patreon subscribers and our PayPal subscribers, we also rely on a la carte contributions during the program and on the part of the overnight crew. So thank you. Thank you again. Scott in San Diego says, yay, I knew if I just kept tickling the crystal with the cat's whisker, I'd eventually get the show. Is that what brought it on? Well, I'd like to know what got tickled with what that made all my credentials go away. Maybe the folks at Microsoft were otherwise engaged by virtue of the fact that Geezer Disgustus has said that he will allow them to purchase part of the U.S. operations of TikTok, as long as the U.S. Treasury, and by that he means him, gets a cut. Because there's always grift. Always, always grift. Now, this is, of course, Trump-tanic Tuesday. It is that day on which we take note of moments of right-wing intellect where, well, were they the captain of the Titanic, they would see the iceberg ahead and say, full steam ahead! We're going to ram it! Show that iceberg who's who! And we've got no small amount of that we can go into this evening. And we will. Of course, it's Conversation Radio 2, and we'll do some conversating as well at some point in the program. You're mighty welcome to jump in. I do confess I'm a little bit addled by the last hour of, you know, because when you're in engineering mode, you're in engineering mode. And then when you're in show mode, you're in show mode. And the two don't like, they don't get along well with each other. That's why there are engineers and that's why there's talent. You don't ask the engineers to do the program and you don't ask the talent to do the engineering, because neither one of them ever seem to interface well. Right. And so just a quick update for those of you who follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or actually for those of you who don't, just a quick update. There it was, as sure as the sun appears in the east every morning, an article from our local TV journalism outlet, WOAY-TV Beckley, Oak Hill Beckley, celebrating the super spreader event that was that went down this past Saturday about 10 miles from where I live. "Hey, Bob," says Darlene in Connecticut. "No power here in Connecticut. Tornado watches and warnings and lots of debris on the property. Wasn't even sure it was a live program until you just announced it." "Thanks, Isaias. Glad to hear your voices. I can't do shit here, so I'm trying to organize the office while I still have some light. Crockpot dinner interrupted, dishwasher cycle interrupted, and weekly unemployment benefits claim interrupted. Still no money yet for UC, but I have to hedge my bets." Oh, no doubt. Those are kind of unusual, the tornado watches and warnings and such, aren't they? For a place like Connecticut? I mean, you get the occasional nor'easter and so forth, but, welcome to climate change. Lest we forget, that's still out there in the midst of this here pandemic. And I'll go into the super spreader event here just in a moment. I know I've been kind of obsessive compulsive about it, but I'm pissed off. Lee in New York says, "Microsoft probably lost your credentials when they forced you to accept the latest, greatest, most popular version of Edge, as in pushing you over the edge." Yeah. Yeah, I saw that, Randy. Randy says, "I sent you a warning email that there was a phony Microsoft phishing email that asked for a new licensing agreement, and the response by the customer introduces malware that deletes files." This wasn't that, because this has happened before. It's just never been quite this extensive. This was just plain, because we don't answer any squirrely emails here. No. And generally speaking, that applies to, that's me, that's Agnes, and it's even Ferg. So, no, this appears to be just straight up, Microsoft fuckuppery. I know something similar has happened to Steve from Georgia Stan from time to time. Otto says, "Why does Bob feel the need to use micro shit?" Well, because I don't have enough money to install a whole bunch of Apple computers in here, because expensive. And two, because Linux just isn't stable enough to, and I don't much feel like learning a whole new operating system. I've had several adventures with Linux in its various incarnations, and none of them ever ended well. Because you have to find a couple of specialty pieces out there to get the program up to the servers. And this particular piece that we've used from the very beginning of the program. And hence I said, that's why I said don't start with the emails. I should have included the chat room. Yeah. So we had a... let me back up for a minute. Darlene just mentioned, what hasn't happened in Congress so far in terms of support for people still racked by the pandemic, economically hammered. David in South Carolina, Stan, just sent this along from AL.com. Tommy Tuberville says $600 a week is way too much for working people whose lives have been upended by a pandemic that could have been avoided, but wasn't because, well, maggots. Which brings me to something I've been wanting to talk about for a while, namely Tommy Tuberville. Now, Tommy Tuberville is the Republican nominee for the state of Alabama to run for the seat that is presently held by Doug Jones. Before he decided to be a first-time senatorial candidate, his claim to fame was his college football coaching career. Now, this is a guy who says $600 a week is way too much. As Doug Jones pointed out, he not only took a $5.1 million buyout from Auburn to get him off their field, but he continues to get paid $60,000 a year by the state of Alabama for a job that he quit in 2008. Right. So he was at, and Alabama being the football maniacs that they are, I would think that they would take some of this into consideration. At one point in time, Tommy Tuberville, and this is not a conversation about college football, okay? So don't worry about it. We're not going to get down there and talk about athletics and things like that that the pros like. No, this is more in the way of a character study. It was 1994 when Tommy Tuberville got tapped to be the head coach of the Ole Miss Rebels. Ole Miss was having a hard time finding anybody that wanted the job because they were buried under NCAA sanctions, meaning that they didn't have much in the way of scholarships. But Tommy was hungry, and he took the job. Previously, he'd been a defensive backs, nose guard, linebacker coach at Arkansas State. An assistant at Miami, defensive coordinator. He'd been defensive coordinator and linebackers coach at Texas A&M, and then the big day came, and they said, "Tommy Tuberville, will you come and coach our Ole Miss Rebels?" And he said, "Why, yes, I will." And so, yeah, he got a bit of a reputation there. And they referred to him as the Riverboat Gambler because he was known for going for it on fourth down when nobody in their right mind would, and occasionally getting away with it. And so by the... By the 1998 season, he'd built himself a bit of a reputation. And at one point in time, because it's college football in the Deep South, in the SEC generally, it has all of the everything that you would want in the way of drama and personality conflicts, and so. Given the success he had enjoyed at Ole Miss, it was taken as a given that Tommy Tuberville would probably be lured away by some other school. And when the rumors began to swirl about his imminent departure, he he stepped to a microphone at Ole Miss and said, "They'll have to carry me out of here in a pine box." Meaning that he had no intention of being hired away to coach at another school. Not even an entire week passed when he announced that he had signed to coach at Auburn. Yeah. Next door to the east in Alabama. Sadly, they did not get to carry him out in a pine box. And so he had a fairly successful season at Auburn, until he didn't. And he got coach of the American Football Coaches Association Coach of the Year in 2004, and won the Paul Bear Bryant Award in 2004, and something kind of fitting in that because, well, Bear Bryant was from Arkansas and coached at Alabama and made his biggest career advances in Alabama. And the same was true of Tommy Tuberville. And he beat Alabama some, which goes a long way in keeping your job at Auburn. But by 2008, things had soured. And that's where the buyout comes in. Auburn didn't want him anymore because, among other things, he got caught in what was eventually it got to the point where, for the first time ever, Auburn lost to Vanderbilt in over 50 years. And then Auburn got caught reaching out to Bobby Petrino, who was having a damn fine season at Louisville. The press found out about it. And it became known all over Alabama and the rest of the SEC as Jetgate. Because they found the tail number of the plane that was going to meet with Bobby Petrino, and then all of that fell apart. And so, he was eventually asked to resign from Auburn. You'd think, now what I've like, this should be enough to tank any political career. In a state that's absolutely batshit crazy for college football. But no. He got the aforementioned $5.1 million buyout for quitting his job. That's some wealth privilege is what that is. You get up there to where you're making the real money, and you'll get paid to quit. So he sucked $5.1 million out of the state of Alabama. He got $3 million within 30 days of quitting, and within a year, he got the other $2.1 million. And still, he pulls in about $60,000 a year to this day for a job that Doug Jones noted that he quit in 2008, 12 years ago. Went on, coached some more. He coached at Texas Tech for a couple of years and 3 years at Cincinnati, but the glory never returned. But a fellow with some walking around, Jed Clampett walking around money, has to be careful to make sure that that money grows. And so in 2012, while he was still coaching football, the Securities and Exchange Commission decided to have a long look at old Tommy Tuberville and his business partner. And, well, the SEC alleged that Tommy Tuberville had defrauded his investors in a cheesy little hedge fund they were running. The investors filed a lawsuit in federal court alleging fraud. And in 2013, upon undisclosed terms, Tommy Tuberville wrote a check, apparently, without admitting liability for having ripped off his own clients. And that is what the state of Alabama, the Republicans therein, thinks would be a fitting replacement for Doug Jones, a Democratic member of the United States Senate who, without a doubt, is insufficiently ideologically pure, but is nonetheless a D, counted among the D's in the Senate of the United States, and would go a long way toward taking chinless Mitch McConnell's nasty little paws off the gavel in the Senate if he could keep his job. As a former student of the Capstone, the University of Alabama, as opposed to Auburn, I just couldn't see, even if I was a Republican, I'd find somebody else to vote for besides voting for a former Auburn head coach. God, what a sleaze bag. You may recall that before the primary, or the special election, the runoff, you may recall that his campaign bus caught fire on the side of the road, and not in a good way. But, yeah, a grifter is accusing Doug Jones of being out of touch with Alabama and saying that working people whose lives have been upended by this dondemic, thank you, Dennis, that $600 a month is too much. Frankly, I think it's way too little. In something in a situation like this pandemic, I think it's safe to say that we should have some way of dealing with unemployment that runs at not some paltry percentage of income, but actually provides full income replacement. I mean, Jesus Christ, if we can give $1 trillion handout to the poor, poor billionaires, and we did, we can afford full income replacement for people who have lost their jobs, primarily in service industries that involve close contact with the public. Suffice to say, I do not have a great deal of faith in the people of Alabama any more than I have any faith in the people of West Virginia to get this one right. You know, the quadrennial one-question IQ test. And its associated sub-questions on people like Tommy Tuberville. I wonder if he's still wearing his orange tie with the little AU motif on it. You wonder how that plays with the Bama fans. Well, I can get over it. I mean, for all of sin and come short of the glory of God, somebody has to coach Auburn. But at least he cares about the precious little fetuses. Because he done been endorsed by the National Right to Life Committee, America's largest anti-abortion industry. And he's real proud of that. That only happened Oh, golly Moses, that only happened 7 days ago. So it don't matter much. As long as that baby's a fetus. Oh, Tommy Tuberville loves it. But by God, if that little baby's born to some family that's trying to survive in the middle of a pandemic, well, $600 is too damn much to be a paying of anybody what's out of work. Because Tommy Tuberville has conservative family values. Yeah, I'm sure at some point in time he'll promise the people of Alabama 3 meals a day. And if he's elected, he'll deliver. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. That's true. And, says Ron and Raleigh, it's a fucking cult. The GOP, the maggots, absolutely. So I just, like I said, I've been meaning to take a moment to look into Tommy Tuberville and his little old fraud scandal. I wonder if the folks at the Lincoln Project have taken note of Tommy's little fraud problem. Yeah, the stories were all over the place back when back when he was sued, 2012. And he was sued while he was head coach at Texas Tech, and he settled while he was head coach at Cincinnati. $1.7 million, that ain't exactly chump change. Yeah. The story on it from the New York Times back then. A little more than a decade ago, after departing from Auburn University, where he was head coach, Mr. Tuberville entered into a 50-50 partnership with a former Lehman Brothers broker named John David Stroud. Their ventures, which included TS Capital Management and TS Capital Partners, Tuberville and Stroud, TS, turned out to be a financial fraud. Mr. Stroud was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and Mr. Tuberville was sued by investors who accused him of fraud and violating his fiduciary duty to take care of their investments, and he reached a private settlement with them. I'll bet he did. On the campaign trail in February, somebody asked him about it, and he said, "Well, I was an investor like the rest of them. They sued me because I invested in it, and he used my name to get other people to put money in. There's nothing ever implicated by anybody that I'd done anything wrong. I felt bad that he used my name." See, that's the problem. Tommy Tuberville is also a liar. He didn't pick the stocks. He seldom showed up for work. But he did the glad-handing part of the Rainmaker gig. Introduced himself to potential investors and had business cards that said he was a managing partner, and he leased him a Beamer, and his health insurance was paid through the company. Yeah. His lawyer and campaign chairman, a dude named Stan McDonald, said it was a big mistake and he's paid for it. How much? Oh, I'm sorry. That's confidential, isn't it? And even though the New York Times said, "Why don't you release your investors that sued you from their confidentiality agreements?" Yeah, but Tommy Tuberville's lawyers said, "Nah, not got that." Well, I guess you can say this much.
he's at least a consistently typical Republican, isn't he? Those tornadoes and tornado watches and warnings in Connecticut, Darlene says, unusual in the past. The town I grew up in had two on Sunday. Totally unexpected, an F-O and an F-1. I didn't know there was such a thing as an F-O. I saw someone drive by my house this afternoon when the storm started kicking up. He had his arm out the window and was twirling his finger in a circle in the air, warning oncoming drivers. I have to assume he was warning northbound drivers that a tornado or rotation in the sky had been spotted further north. Most likely, tornadoes will continue to become more frequent here. I'm sorry for that, Darlene, because they're no fun to deal with. And they're downright terrifying. Let's see, what else? Kyle with a note. So we have a Nazi state police, and yes, that is what this country deserves to be called until we can prove we're not, handcuffing children and laying them out on the ground in Aurora. This country makes me sick. Yeah, that's another story to get to down the road. Children in handcuffs. Dennis from Columbus, who gave us the concept of the Don-demic. Sleepy Joe, huh? Well, it must have been the dozing Don when he was getting those early COVID briefings. Let's see here. And I had to reply to an email that wasn't for public consumption. Tommy the Taker, James in Illinois, says, old Tommy sounds like just the kind of guy to go to Congress and talk about takers. He'll probably have some lovely conversations with Bishop Willard Romney, don't you figure? Lee in New York, paid to quit. Well, that's peanuts. Carly Farina. Got over $40 million for being fired. Yeah, that being fired can be a real windfall. Ain't got to work. Just go out on the bass boat and put a line in the water and zip around the lake. And yeah. As for Hurricane Isaias, it passed New York City to the west, Lee says. Usually they're east and out to sea as they pass by. Ugly business. Here's the reality of unemployment in Merca right now. Lee shares this with us. Here's my unemployment situation. New York maxes weekly payment at 80% of your former weekly wages, or $504, whichever is less. That money is taxed, thanks to President 666, old Ronald Wilson Reagan himself. Is that the upside-down Herman Cain? Well, I'd say they're both right side down now. I'm taking a class to better myself. No government help. Thank God my credit rating's good. Oh, Lee. Greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today in the universe forever under God, right? Sometimes I miss my reverb. Thank you to Jeremy. We are off and running on this evening's fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly for getting us started. Hopefully you'll get company. And, I guess there's a shit show this evening. Has it already come and gone? They've told him to keep it. Apparently, they've told him to told Nitwit Nero to keep it short. Oh no, it's still going on. How lucky for us!
Approximately 600,000 are without power along the East Coast, and utility companies are working around the clock to restore service as quickly as possible. I spoke to Governor Cooper, I spoke to Governor DeSantis, and I spoke to all of the people at FEMA, and they're working very hard. Coastal areas in the storm's path can expect to see the storm surge and rip currents, while inland areas could see flooding and very, very high winds. FEMA is responding to...
You know, apparently his lifelong ambition was to be a weathercaster on TV.
My administration is monitoring the situation very closely. We have the military on guard, but we have... FEMA is there in all cases. Corps of Engineers is ready if needed. The Army Corps of Engineers, very talented people. I urge everyone in the storm's path to remain alert and to follow the guidance of your state and local authorities. I now want to update you on the path forward having to do with the China virus. Before I do that, I want to give
evil
you some numbers,
bastard,
which are rather spectacular, that just came out. The manufacturing index of the Institute for Supply Management, that's ISM, most of you know it by ISM, increased for the third month in a row, rising nearly 2 points in July to 54.2. That was fantastic.
GDP is still down 32%, fuckwit.
March of 2019. This is remarkable considering the survey was conducted throughout July and showed significant improvement despite the Southwest, in particular, virus hotspots. The ISM measures, and it's a very strong measure, of new orders rose 5 points in July to 61.5, and its highest reading that would be since September of 2018. That's a big number. Since the April low, new orders are up over 34 points, which is the largest increase in the history of the ISM dating back all the way to 1948. So 34 points, that's the largest since 1948. Similarly, the ISM's measure of production is up 35 points from its April low to a reading of 62.1, which is the largest three-month gain in over 70 years. That's some number. These were...
It's a number. Definitely a number.
Surprising, but I've been saying we're doing well, and those numbers are really spectacular. Automobile sales, likewise, are a key factor in the resurgence of manufacturing since the March low of 8.8 million units, with sales and all of the numbers that are going up stunningly. It's 65% increase since then to 14.5 million units, which is a massive number. The great strength and great news is really for states like
definitely a massive number.
Michigan and Ohio, South Carolina, Pennsylvania, very good, Florida, a little bit. These are great numbers, record-setting numbers. The strength in new car sales is also evident in the used car market, where soaring demand, literally soaring demand, is putting upward pressure on the used car prices. This is a leading indicator of the motor vehicle industry. The need to restock, deplete...
Say Yosemite, asshole.
...galvanize the factory sector, and we think very substantially based on the numbers. We're very, very happy with these numbers, and I think most people are anywhere from surprised to shocked by these numbers in a very positive way. Economy-wide inventories crashed at a near $320 billion annualized rate last quarter. Crash in that case means a good thing, not a bad thing. That's the largest drop ever on record, ever. Home builder sentiment likewise is soaring, as our home sales sentiment is now higher than last year, and new homes recently made a 13-year high. So we have a 13-year high in new home construction. new business applications are very strong. That just came out. The widely followed Atlanta Fed GDP. And that's something that they have just come out with now, forecasts the new data point and incorporates it into quarterly estimates. It looks like it's showing a 20% annualized growth in the current quarter. So 20% in the current quarter, we'll take that all day long. Let's see if that's right. That's a projection. So we'll see if that's right. The Atlanta Fed, very respected. The virus, back to that. We are continuing to
and now
monitor,
back to Bill in the virus center.
Monitor in particular hotspots across the south, southwest, and the west. And we're seeing indications that our strong mitigation efforts are working very well, actually, especially to protect those who are most at risk, which has really been our primary focus.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because let me introduce us all to a high school in Georgia. It's called North Paulding, P-A-U-L-D-I-N-G. And it is in Dallas, Georgia. They went back to school today. If you were in the chat room earlier, you would have seen a photograph that Sparky posted of what the hallways of North Paulding High School looked like today. North Paulding High School is ranked 8,981st out of, I don't know, this year. It's the number one ranked high school in Paulding County, Georgia. It's the 205th high school in Georgia high schools, and it's 112th in Atlanta, Georgia metro area high schools. Of its student body, 19% have passed at least one AP exam. 29% have taken at least one AP exam. 46% of the student body demonstrates proficiency in reading. 35% demonstrate proficiency in mathematics. And yet, somehow or another, they graduate 93% of their students. 21.6% of their students are deemed ready for college. So they started school today because we got to get our children back in school because they're terribly depressed. But we do know one thing about North Paulding High School. Its beloved football team, he has the Rona. North Paulding High School principal Gabe Carmona sent out an email Sunday and said, "I want you to know that while preparing for the upcoming season, our football team has learned of both new positive tests and potential symptoms within the program." So they got 3 days a week now of face-to-face, masked, no mask to no mask, LARPing and smollicking and grabulating and wallering and lollygagging and spewing and singing and shouting and carrying on and spraying virus particles all over North Paulding High School. The photograph today was horrifying because, see, all they had to do, you just got to get it and take it home to Mama and Daddy and Meemaw and Papaw. And the next thing you know, you got yourself a little pandemic just running all over creation. Yes, you do. But Brian Kemp, who had to cheat and suppress the vote in order to become governor of Georgia, don't much give a fuck. Because he's a maggot and he's following orders. North Paulding High School, remember that name.
There won't be lockdowns, but we watch specific areas. We're very careful and we're putting out embers, we're putting out flames. When you look at what's happening with
putting out fires
Miami,
with gasoline,
and it's going The numbers are going down, but Florida is going down very significantly. Texas and California are going down rather significantly. On telemedicine, as we discussed the last time, as I said numerous times during this day, it's an incredible thing that's happening. A central part of our effort to protect the elderly is to greatly expand access to telehealth so seniors can be treated from the safety of their homes. And that's what's happening.
And, you know, die there. As Matt in San Francisco points out, is it necessary, is it really necessary when reporting numbers to let people know the numbers are a number?
And that's a number, and it's definitely a number.
It must be difficult, Matt observes, to have a brain that thinks that is a good strategy. Yes, I know. Matt observed earlier, worshiping at the money altar. As you know, the COVID crisis is spreading through California. It's getting more and more difficult to get through the day without wanting to run for the hills and hide in a cave. On a daily basis, I keep up with the national, state, and county numbers. Since I oversee business units in four separate counties, I have to keep up. For the first few months of the pandemic, keeping up with the numbers was more of an intellectual endeavor. However, over the past couple of weeks, it's become a trigger to action. The first was a couple of weeks back when in one location, the brother of an employee tested positive. Since that employee lives in the same house, it was a hit once removed as the associate ultimately tested negative but was quarantined for 14 days. Last week, it was an employee who tested positive in a different location. This case required informing the county within 4 hours of the confirmed case and supplying them with the employee's personal information and all possible contacts in the workplace. This was followed by shutting the store down, bringing in a sanitation crew, sanitizing the 25,000-square-foot building, informing all employees of what had transpired, and then opening up again for business the next afternoon. 2 days later, another positive test of an employee in the least populated county of the four. This particular case hadn't worked the 4 days prior, so it did not require shutdown and sterilization, but did require everything else. In speaking with my boss, I learned there have been several shutdowns throughout the state, sterilizations and reopening. We even have an established protocol and guidelines, scripts, etc., on what to do and how to communicate with the associate base. There have been many times in my leadership career in business that I've had to wrestle internal moral conflicts created as business interests and personal beliefs slam into each other. I can't remember a time when the struggle has kept me up at night worrying to the extent I have been lately. I can't help but think, am I part of a corporate structure that is perpetuating placing people at risk of infection and potential death? Are the CDC guidelines we are following enough? Are we foolishly following guidelines by a government that we know is led by a person who is woefully unfit for the job? Where does all this lead? What path are we as a society on? What does this priority of continuing to operate in order to maintain revenues say about our collective priorities? How many lives are we willing to sacrifice in order to serve the community as an essential business? What the fuck are we doing? And what part am I playing in it? Why the fuck are we here? Why the fuck can we not do anything to change the leadership of this country that has created a situation where everyone is at risk? Can you see what I mean about hiding in a cave? Matt asks. On a daily basis, I go through a mental exercise to put these circular thoughts in a box and get busy with the task ahead, hoping that today is not the day that COVID lands ever closer. Will today be the day that it hits me? It really didn't have to be this way. Now we can't even run. Can't get out. Can't leave the country. The other countries of the world have said, no thanks, no Americans allowed. America sure has established its greatness. We're now the greatest threat to the health and well-being of the planet. Well, I mean, to be fair, Matt, let's consider that before the pandemic struck, we were that anyway. we were the greatest single threat to life in Afghanistan and Iraq from 2001 to, well, probably the present. I mean, remember, ISIS-ISIL wouldn't have had so much as a pea shooter if we hadn't provided the weapons necessary for them to rise up. And if Dim Leader hadn't completely cast aside the entire military hierarchy of Iraq and weaponized them to go and form a caliphate. So there's that. Then there's climate change, Matt. And there's no doubt that in pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords, in engaging in bunko, hokum, bullshit, fraud about the climate crisis, we were a massive existential threat to the future of the species on the planet. So it's all about perspective, Matt. That's what it is. Perspective is what it is. Matt continues and said, I had a sinking feeling when I saw the Orange Menace on the escalator descending to announce his intention to run. History has shown me over and over again, when Republicans are in control, it equals more death. That picture of Corona Claudius on the down escalator was a stark warning of what was ahead for America. Bravo, Republicans. Well played. Yeah. Matt, I got a question, if you're still listening. And you've spoken to some of this in previous notes about telling people who didn't want to wear a mask coming into your store that they had to leave. And it ties in with something that we experienced here that I was talking about last week. Well, it came to fruition. If you go over to my Facebook page or Instagram account or Twitter timeline, you will see a photograph, a couple of photographs, from this past Saturday's graduation ceremony up at the local high school, about 10 miles from where I presently sit. Now, I shared with you last week what the principal of the high school said about how they would handle this super spreader event. And again, I used the Georgia Tech COVID-19 event planning tool, and it showed a greater than 98% chance that, along with all the mommies and daddies and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and kitties and cousins and neighbors and meemaws and papaws, that the Rona would be coming to the graduation too. And so, it, especially on the Facebook post, there developed a bit of a game, shall we say. And it was called, we will call it, how many people can you find wearing masks? It was a sort of hillbilly Where's Waldo. And I think Joy in Ann Arbor counted the highest number. She found 9, but two of those weren't wearing them right. Now, this is 9 out of a couple of hundred people. And you might recall from the story last week how the principal of the high school said, well, we'll be social distancing, and we'll ask people not to sit in the parts of the stands that are marked with a red X or red tape or painted red or got a badly sunburned person sitting in it, whatever. It will be social distancing, and of course, we got a mask requirement. Seems pretty obvious, looking at the photographs, that the mask requirement was not enforced, and neither was the social distancing. And again, we have a mask mandate here in almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia Stan. It's a mask mandate that was put in place by Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice, who, you'll recall, I mentioned, said, now this little mask is our only bullet in our gun for beating this virus.
In no way, shape, form, or fashion am I telling you that somebody's going to arrest you if you don't wear your mask. But you got to wear the fucking mask.
He claimed later he did not say fucking. He did not claim that he did not say that no one would arrest you for not wearing a mask, because that's the goddamn truth. And so, when it appeared, the sad attempt at journalism that described, after the fact, the graduation ceremonies, it contained language something like, "And instead of sitting in a cool, air-conditioned gymnasium, those attending the graduation sat outside so everybody could stay safe." Who let that onto the internet? Who let that be broadcast? Because that is simply not true. Especially when you're LARPing and smollicking and grabulating and lollygagging all over each other, spewing and spraying and singing and praying. I'm sure they all stood up, didn't have no masks on, and sang the national anthem at each other as loud as they possibly could, you know, to show those people. They love Mark O'Hare. Yeah, we ain't going to have them Black Lives Matter. Ain't nobody going to kneel. So why is it, when you actually have a mask mandate, even if there's no criminal enforcement, even if law enforcement refuses to do their damn job, when the mandate is in place, that means you, business owner, can say to someone, "No mask, no service. You don't have a mask on. I'm not selling you shit. Won't take your money. Won't sell you anything. Go put your mask on. We'll do business." But the number of people willing to do that here is minuscule. And the number of people wearing their masks with their beaks hanging over the upper edge of it is a horror. If we want to get over this, we need to shut everything down, the whole country. And none of this half-ass shut down either. Limit the places people can go, shut everything down, and don't do that and just hang people out to dry. This is a rich, rich country. We can shut everything down, and we can make sure that everybody gets their income replaced while we're doing it. A couple of months. And we can have this thing on the way to being under control. Because numbers go up exponentially, but they also go down exponentially. But we have to have the will to do it. And so I guess the question I have for Matt is, why won't these businesses enforce? Is it again because they're afraid they're going to, I mean, does every customer count that much down to the Rippy Mart? If you stop selling to everybody who doesn't wear a mask, do you go out of business? Is that how it works? Or do maybe people learn to put the damn mask on? We got people who work in these stores who refuse to wear a mask. Because, of course, this is a hoax. It's a question to which I have no answer. But I know that what happened here, And God, I saw a photo from Oshkosh, Wisconsin over the weekend. I mean, if I thought our little graduation ceremony was bad, holy mackerel, Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I mean, they were packed in butthole to belly button. And they're all out there just celebrating in the sun. And the fellers got their swim trunks on and no shirts. And the women are as skimpy as our patriarchal laws will allow. And you wouldn't even have to try to get the Rona there. All you got to do is turn around and say, "Hey, how you doing? Hey, how are you?" And there you go. And so we count 14 days from Saturday, the first day of August. That'll be the 15th. By then, the Rona will have made itself known. And that'll require testing. And that'll be another 2 weeks. So somewhere around September, we might find out that people have the Rona from that super spreader event. But it will be so attenuated from the date of the incident that the people who let this thing go on will have plausible deniability. Well, I ain't seen no evidence of it. Yeah, well, you'd think the Earth's 7,000 years old, too, don't you? Well, that's because it is. Jeremy in Vermont says, I was scrolling through the crapshoot that's Facebook earlier and came across an ad. Not just an ad, but the first ad I saw, it was for a site claiming this flag won't die. Yes, selling the devil's diaper. I've not once posted anything that supports that flag, but I've made mention of BLM. Could it really be as creepy as the cookies are used to try and trigger someone with ads to see how they reacted? Post-wise? It's just creepy, says Jeremy. Oh, it's way creepy. Flavio says, and then you're afraid to ask people to put on a mask. They might just pull their Second Amendment solution on you. Yeah, because we got that story, too. David in South Carolina Stan notes, numbers are going down since the White House took control of the numbers. Funny how that works. Yeah, it's amazing how when the White House takes control of the deck of cards, the White House seems to get all the aces. It's the same principle. Masks. Let me tell you a story, says Megan. When I lived in southern Delaware, there was a restaurant set to open after buying it from Friendly's. It was all set to open as a granny-type restaurant until a rumor started that they refused to serve firemen. That was all I heard. I didn't know the whole story, but this restaurant ended up having to close before it even opened because of a rumor. So yes, unfortunately, it doesn't take much for small businesses to close, especially if you're in a small town and you don't think the same way they do. But when I talk about small businesses, I'm talking about your local Rippy Marts, which are parts of chains. They are corporate. And they're not going to be driven out of business. Because in a small town, something like your local Rippy Mart is very important. And so, what, you're going to drive an extra 15 miles to buy a tank of gas? When you really, really, really want that ice-cold foamy beer, you're going to drive an extra 15 miles? Or just put on the little fucking mask. But yeah, Megan, I get your point. Nitwit Nero's taking questions.
What you tweeted out earlier today in regards to Florida and your comfortableness as it relates to mail-in ballots for Florida.
Okay, I'm glad you're asking.
Why does that apply to Florida and it doesn't apply to mail-in balloting across the country?
So Florida's got a great Republican governor, and it had a great Republican governor. It's got Ron DeSantis, Rick Scott, two great governors. And over a long period of time, they've been able to get the absentee ballots done extremely professionally. Florida is different from other states. I mean, in
Nevada, adverbs. There's always an adverb.
Said, let's just send out millions of ballots, and the post office cannot be prepared. I haven't spoken to the post office.
That's a lie, of course.
But I don't know how they could possibly be prepared.
They don't send out ballots. Florida, they send out ballot applications.
Years, and they have a very good system of mail-in, and that would be absentee or even beyond absentee.
See, here's the funny thing. Nobody doesn't know this. Somebody clued him in and hipped him to the fact that Florida remains in Republican control, Republican control, largely because of mail-in ballots. That it works for Republicans' advantage in Florida. So, all of a sudden, he trusts mail-in ballots in Florida.
Election. I think they, and I'll give you the story, I think you have to do that election over. That election's no good. You have to take a look.
New York.
They have thousands of ballots. They don't know what happened to them. Is there fraud? Is there? It's a disaster.
No, they don't.
It's only for a relatively small number of ballots. But I think they have to do the election in New York over. The Times wrote a big story about it yesterday, front page story. It's a disaster. It's a mess. And they have to do that. I think they have to do that election over. Nobody can know what the election result is. So in the case of Florida, they've done a great job. They've had tremendous success with it. But they've been doing this over many years, and they've made it really terrific. So for Florida, you can mail in your ballots. You don't have to go. In maybe a couple of other states, they've worked out a system. But this took years to do. This doesn't take weeks or months. In the case of Nevada, they're going to be voting in a matter of weeks. And you can't do that. I can't imagine the post office could do it. All of a sudden, they're supposed to be dealing in millions of ballots. But Florida's done a great job, and we have total confidence that if you mail in your ballot in Florida, it's going to matter. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
What about in other states? Would you encourage voters in other states to request ballots?
Oh, what a silly, silly question that was. Would you encourage voters in other states? Well, if they're Republican states, suddenly they will have a very fantastically, fabulously, wonderfully excellent, super-duper, tasty, yummy, perfect, really perfect mail-in ballot system. What a jackass. In answer to my question, and thank you for it, Matt. Matt says, I think businesses are afraid of negative press, negative social media posts, potential lawsuits, no matter how ridiculous. Even our corporate training on addressing customers about wearing a mask being mandatory coaches us on the front line how to approach and inform, but ultimately if someone refuses to wear a mask, they land on allowing the person to continue to shop. I do believe they're afraid of the violence that may result from refusing to serve someone. I suppose the liability for a corporation that puts someone in a situation where the result could be personal harm or death is greater than the liability of transmitting the virus. Probably because you can't exactly prove where you got the virus once you have it. You can prove, if you're assaulted or killed at work, that the assault was a result of you refusing to service a customer. So in short, a corporation can't be held liable for someone getting the virus, but they can be held to account for violence as a result of directing employees to confront idiots. And that shit is all out there. I saw a teenage boy work in the front counter at Burger King. And a guy there grabbed him, slapped him, and told him that he was going to send the woman working in the back to prison for robbery. Don't know if there was any follow-up. But that kind of stuff is all over the place. And then there's... Megan says, take note. This is how COVID Caligula will handle the general election this year.
We have to do it over. It's a fraud.
Very likely. He's telling us what he's going to do. And just because we need a giggle once in a while, I mentioned his attempt to pronounce the word Yosemite. Do let's enjoy this.
Into the sky, when they gaze upon Yosemites, towering sequoias, their love of...
Got that right. First, it was Yosemites. And then, I guess because he was thinking about Stormy and Karen, it was Yosemites.
Into the sky, when they gaze upon Yosemites, towering sequoias, their love of...
Yeah, we really don't need further context, just like we didn't need context yesterday for Jerry Falwell. I know. I got to give a cowbell to Steve for being right on top of that one. The sequoias are Jewish? Well, yeah. I mean, California Jewish. I mean, there are no Yosemites in the Catskills. Well, I guess the Yosemites. Yosemites! Yeah, that was part of the script for the reboot. And it was going to be... Back when back when they were rebooting Star Trek with J.J. Abrams in charge, there were also plans because, you know, he was a hot property for a while, J.J. Abrams. There was a plan to reboot Cecil B. DeMille's Ten Commandments. And it involved hiring Sylvester Stallone to play Moses. And so that was one of his big dramatic lines as he stood there having just parted the Red Sea and yelled, "Yo, Semites!" Matt in San Francisco, who is near enough to know, says, "We all know Yosemites are from the planet Semen in the Sex Galaxy." Is that part of the script for the porn classic Flesh Gordon, Matt? I don't remember. Yeah, Steve in New York says, "Well, maybe not Jewish only. I guess they could be Semitic Christians, Muslims, etc." Yo, Semites! I like it better that way. Scott in San Diego's apparently having a problem this evening. Now, hold on a goddamn vote counting minute, Bob! It's never good when an email from Scott starts out with swearing. "Trump may be trying to sell us his 'the post office can't handle all these ballots come November' crap, but I for one ain't buying it. Publishers Clearinghouse has for decades been sending out millions of their sweepstakes come-ons, not just once a year, but four times a year. Yeah, I think the post office can handle 125 or 130 million by-mail ballots. P.S. Read Trump's pronunciation of Yosemite. Yosemites. It's how hip Trumpsters greet a group of Jews on the streets." Oh, I have a feeling Yosemites is just going to be a gift that keeps on giving. Hey, thanks, Renee. Renee just jumped in. Renee from D.C. just jumped in alongside Jeremy. And we're taking down the fundraising goal a little bit at a time. So thank you very, very kindly for being part of it, Jeremy and Renee. Thank you so very much. Oh, wait, Randy, you get one too. Randy and P.A. And now back to the black guy with sports. Or Chico Escuela, for those of a certain age. Jeremy says, clearly, Nitwit Nero never watched the Looney Tunes, but they were definitely modeled Yosemite Sam's brilliant speaking quality for a future president.
Wagstag and not pull Frazzleck and Brett Stark.
Yeah, dragons is so stupid. But here's the best part of it all. Nitwit Nero is not the first person to pronounce it Yosemite. And no, there was no episode of WKRP where Les Nessman pronounced it Yosemite. Les Nessman, you'll recall, famously early on in the series, gave us the pronunciation for Chai Chai Rodriguez. And even after Johnny corrects him, he continues and says, Mr. Rodriguez said. Yeah. No, earlier reference to Yosemite, and this was to the cartoon character, Jeremy. Harry Carey, the famous, iconic Cubs play-by-play man, who was brilliantly parodied by Will Ferrell on Saturday Night Live, had a son. And his son, Skip, died all too early. But one of those things that made my father laugh for the remainder of his days was the fact that he was tuned into a Braves game. Back then, you know, if there was a Braves game on, my dad was watching. Not because he loved the Braves, but just because baseball. And I'd look at him and say, let's watch a movie, Dad. No, this is real. This is live. This is happening right now. And I had to get a lot older before I understood what his point was. The immediacy of seeing something as it happens. Hearing something as it happens. Which is why this program, for lo these many years, has been a live program. I guess I could sit down and just start doing segments of the program, stitch them all together, and then run them, and everybody'd listen live, and we'd play it live, but the immediacy wouldn't be there. It's like being in a theater, and the footlights are up, and whether there's a And so you can't see out into the house, but by God, you know, there's a difference between rehearsing on a stage with the lights up and no crowd in the house, and having the lights up and feeling all that energy pouring back at you. And that's what live radio feels like. Because you've got the immediacy of the moment, and you've got people in contact, carrying on one way or another an ongoing conversation and sharing that energy exchange. Careful. I'm getting ready to sliding inexorably toward Captain Kirking. That energy exchange. Stop it, Bob. But it's very real. And my dad understood that. And so he was watching a Braves game, and Skip Carey was calling it. And he made a reference to Yosemite Sam. And my father remembered that until the day he died, and every time he would think of it, he'd get a giggle out of it. Because, again, if you follow the philosophy of Kurt Vonnegut Jr., you recognize the importance of something like that, because, you know, Kurt said, in the end, I think we were just put here to fart around and dance. And so anything that can bring you that little giggle is well worth it. So this Nitwit Nero saying Yosemite actually served as a doorway where I could access that little giggle again. Of course, I woke up this morning. We went to bed early, Agnes and I. And I woke up to clips of Nitwit Nero sitting down to a face-to-face interview on two uncomfortable chairs between himself and Axios' Jonathan Swan. And, of course, there's never a bottom to any of this. These clips are living proof of my thesis, which we've all pretty much agreed is correct, to wit that in this time in which we live, no matter how weird yesterday was, today was going to be weirder. And no matter how weird today is, tomorrow is going to be weirder still. And it's just this exponential growth in weirdness that makes all of this so difficult to ride through. It's like what I said about what my brother-in-law said about riding out a hurricane. It's the 8 to 16 hours of howling winds that after a while just feel like they're going to drive you absolutely out of your mind. Well, imagine if those howling winds never stop and they only get worse from day to day to day. Kind of like watching Trump's response to the Dondemic he created. And so when I saw the clips of him talking about the Dondemic, about John Lewis, about this, that, and the other thing, oh, God. It's tough when the headache sets in that early in the morning, 6:30. And before we get to the clip, a note from Steve in New York, shutting down the country. And, of course, he declared there, we heard it from
There's not going to be any shutdowns, there's not going to be any lockdowns. There will be embers and there will be little fires, and we'll put them out.
That's just another way of saying, we'll let people die. Which he has done to the tune of 150,000 plus American citizens. As to shutting down the country, Stephen New York said, when you said this, my heart sank. Shutting down the country isn't going to happen. You know this as well as I do. Just to reiterate, here's why. One, at least 33% won't do it. These people are bioterrorist maggots, etc. Two, of those who would, they can't afford it, and our government just isn't going to do anything to help people. Three, people have already been shut in for so long, I don't know if they could do it. As you know, the very reason for the shutdown was to buy us time to ramp up testing, contact tracing, etc. This is just another example of just how bad he fucked this up. I heard an interview with a virologist who noted that pandemics, etc., do eventually burn themselves out because the number of hosts begin to diminish over time. However, the person was adamant that that takes many months or even years. Bob, we really are at the point that we will have to just wait this out. The more I lay out where we are and where we've been on this, the more I have nothing to conclude but that this was intentional. Well, once again, we're back to that distinction formed during the heady days of 9/11 truth between those who were lie hoppers versus those who were my hoppers. My hopper stands for made it happen on purpose. And those are the people who believe that George W. Bush put on his little black coat with his little black boots and his little black hat and ran all over the World Trade Center planting little black bombs. And then he detonated them. The lie hoppers, on the other hand, are the people who thought they had warning and they let it happen on purpose. Based on things like kind of sleazy rice, goes great with kind of sleazy chicken, saying, we never could have imagined people using planes as missiles. But only months before had insisted that George W. Bush stay at sea during a G7, G8 meeting, whatever, in Italy, and commute, specifically because of the fear that terrorists would fly a plane into the meeting. And there was lots of other evidence. Well, where the pandemic is concerned, I'm a lie hopper. Let it happen on purpose. Because there is too much data now to simply think that this was common garden variety ineptitude. This is malicious and malignant conduct. It, just like the super spreader event here in my county this past weekend, that wasn't simple negligence. Simple negligence is you did or you didn't do that thing which the reasonable, prudent person in the course and scope of doing whatever or not doing whatever would have or would not have done in the same or similar circumstances. I know that sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook, but that's just plain negligence. You shoulda and you didn't, or you did and you shouldn't. Then you take the next step up, and that's a fool, okay? Simple negligence, fool. Gross negligence, the next step up, is the damned fool. And that's the person who, knowing full well what to do, does or does not do the other thing. And that's, you knew you shouldn't, but you did anyway, or you knew you should, but you didn't anyway. That's gross negligence. That's a damned fool. And then comes the gold standard of fools, the goddamned fool. And that is willful, wanton, and malicious conduct. And that is, you knew what to do, but you're such a shitty human being that you didn't do it. Or you knew what not to do, but you're such a shitty human being, you deliberately chose to do it. And that's the goddamn fool. And that's where we are. At the very least, this super spreader event in my county was the action of a group of goddamn fools. Willful, wanton, and reckless individuals who knew better, but did it anyway, because even though they knew better, their hearts were set wickedly. And that's the same thing that's going on with this pandemic. At the very least, it is willful, wanton, and reckless conduct. At the least. There's not a chance of fool or damned fool. The lowest level is goddamn fool. What it is more likely is that they saw some political advantage, and we have reporting to that effect, that Jared thought, believed, there's that dichotomy, that Jared believed the disease would only strike blue, democratically oriented states, and therefore it would be good because it would reduce the number of Democratic voters. Jesus, this from a guy who's got relatives who died in the Holocaust. Then again, so does Stephen Miller. And they made the choice that a capo would make. They made the choice that a Sonderkommando would make. And that is depraved, intentional conduct. And in a better world, in a better country, there would be consequences for it. It's one of the things that worries me, is that there won't be. Now, Rusty, said things about remembering dads. My father was totally slack-jawed at instant replay when watching the Stillers. Correct pronunciation and spelling of Stillers, by the way. Yep. Yosemite Street, James in Illinois, says, I remember the first time I visited the hood in San Francisco in search of a salvage yard. When I couldn't find my part, I was on to the next place, which was on Yosemite Street. Didn't have a map, and this was before anyone had a smartphone. So I asked the counter man if he knew where Yosemite Street was. He was puzzled. Then the other guy said, oh, he mean Yosemite. That's exactly what I meant to say. When in Rome. Oh, I know. I know. And you're in Illinois, James. You know how to pronounce that city down in the southern end of the state that's spelled the same way as the capital of Egypt. It ain't Cairo. Nope. And there's a place in Alabama where there's a huge clearinghouse of shit that's been lost on airplanes. It's an outlet of sorts. And the name of that little town is the same word that we apply to people who live in the Saudi Kingdom. A-R-A-B. That, however, is pronounced Arab. Many a lovely young lady has been named C-H-L-O-E. Chloe. Nope, not in Calhoun, West Virginia. That's Chloe. So, you know, I guess there's a sort of a continuum that results in Nitwit Nero saying, Yo Semite. God, such moments.
Into the sky, when they gaze upon Yosemites towering.
Mm-hmm. And after that, some wag posited, Kaylee Maganini, later today, the president did not mispronounce Yosemite. He was intentionally giving a shout-out to the Semites when he said Yosemite. Everybody else in the country has been saying it wrong for 150 years. Thank God. thank God that that cognitive test wasn't person, man, woman, Yosemite, camera, TV. Could have been a real problem. Oh, heaven help us. So, we are into the third hour of the program. Granted, I started a half hour late. Technical difficulties. And we've got $190 to go to stay even with fundraising in the young month of August. So if anybody else wants to jump in and provide some company to Renee and Jeremy, that would be most, most helpful. It would indeed. Yeah, oh dear, we've opened a can of worms. Other American mispronounced places. Versailles. That's in Ohio. It's also in Kentucky. Rio Grande. Yeah, I tripped over that one early on when I came here. And Buena Vista. Buena. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I should mention, because I don't very often, if you'd like to kick in via the United States Postal Service, they do still deliver mail to Beckley, West Virginia. The address is on the main page there, or on the contribute page. Not sure which, can't remember offhand. But it's The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, WV 25801. And I mentioned that because I had a note from one of the folks who participates by mail, who said, you know, I've been mailing contributions for years, but one suddenly came back. Head on communications, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia 25801. This time the envelope came back to me as return to sender, not deliverable as addressed, unable to forward. And there you have it. That just feels very much to me like a matter of the recent announcement of skullduggery in the United States Postal Service. Oh, and what I was getting at earlier, the clip I woke up to of the interview between Nitwit Nero and Jonathan Swan. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Talking about his tremendous success in fighting the Rona.
We're going to look.
Let's look.
And if you look at death,
yeah, started to go up again.
One. Well, right here, the United States is lowest in numerous categories. We're lower.
He's got these weird printed graph sheets that aren't particularly sourced to anything, have obviously been made as visual aids for him by some maggot within his maladministration. And one of them is just four big, brightly colored bars. It's pretty obvious that they're just placating him at this point.
Lower than the world.
Lower than the
lower
world.
Lower than the world.
In what?
Take a look. Right here. Here's case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany.
Yeah. Because that's a number that actually matters. Death as a percentage of population. Not death as a function of, or a portion, or a percentage of cases overall. You get a much more profound idea of how bad things are when you look at death as a percentage of population.
Germany, etc.
You can't do that. You have to go by where. Look, here is the United States. You have to go by the cases. The cases.
Why not as a proportion of population?
When you have somebody, what it says is when you have somebody that has where there's a case.
Oh, okay.
The people that live from those cases.
It's surely a relevant statistic to say if the U.S. has X population and X percentage of death of that population versus South Korea.
No, because you have to go by the cases.
Well, look at South Korea, for example. 51 million population.
Now, before he gets, before Jonathan Swan gets where he's going, let me just quickly urge you to grab the hockey puck and a couple of pieces of duct tape.
300 deaths. It's like, it's crazy.
You don't know that.
I do. It's
you
on
don't
the,
know
it's
that.
You think they're faking their statistics? South Korea?
I won't get into that because I have a very good relationship with the country. But you don't know that.
You don't know that. Nobody can know anything. Nobody knows that the dinosaurs' bones weren't put in the earth to fool the unbelievers. By the devil did that. You can't know that. You can't know when we started riding or invented a wheel or found fire.
This is the essence of the maggot conundrum. You cannot have a rational conversation with somebody whose only answer... Well, you remember the old Monty Python skit argument where the guy goes in and buys an argument and he gets ripped off because everything he says, the only answer is, no, it's not. And finally he says, this isn't an argument. An argument proceeds from a rational set of yada, yada, yada. And the answer is, no, it's not. You're merely gainsaying me. No, I'm not.
You can't know that. You can't know that.
And he doesn't even understand what it is that Jonathan Swan, that he thinks, that he believes Jonathan Swan doesn't fucking know.
And they have spikes. Look, here's
Germany,
one.
Germany, low, 9,000.
Here's one right here, United States. You take the number of cases. Okay. Now look, we're last, meaning we're first.
We're last, meaning we're first.
And he actually holds up this graph. It's pink, brown, orange, and blue. Merck is, of course, blue. And we're last, which means we're best. And it's literally in huge print for the thinking impaired. And I'm not, that's not a joke. We've settled a long time back on the idea that he suffers from, for want of an older term, or from refusal to use an older term. We've settled on the idea that he suffers from what is probably a congenital intellectual disability. I'm not the only one that the bar chart bothered. Jack in Shreveport says, the piece of paper with the four big rectangles of different lengths and colors, that one, I'm glad you brought that up, because I thought it might have been photoshopped into the mix somehow. I thought it might be a joke. No, he proudly holds it up and displays it to Jonathan Swan.
Look what I've got.
And Eileen in New York says, want to bet he handed that over to Jonathan Swan because he couldn't read? Well, remember, Noel Kassler has been trying to tell us for a year now or more that he is functionally illiterate. Yosemite. Yosemite. Yosemites. He is, and I do not use this word lightly, stupid, as in ignorance can be corrected, but you can't fix stupid. And so here we are. Jimmy chiming in with Spokane, Spokane. Yeah, there's that. Megan, for some reason, Eastern Shore folk like to say Washington. And good luck with correcting them. Also see Potomac, Potomac, and Maryland. Well, I say Maryland because that's what it was named. It is the land of Mary, settled under the sponsorship of the House of Calvert, Lord Baltimore, who wanted to set up a safe haven for Roman Catholics. It is Maryland. But Washington... Well, there's a lot of washing. If that's an Eastern Shore thing, then it runs straight up the coast to Philadelphia. Warsh. I think they warsh in Pittsburgh, too. Any help there, Rico in the Berg? And speaking, James in Illinois says, speaking of Python, he's the goddamn parrot salesman. This is an ex-parrot. No, it's not. Those statistics and things like this drive Steve crazy, because Steve has on many occasions told us he's a true data nerd. It's like a teacher asking a kid questions about a book he never read but picked about four sentences from the book to quote back. The teacher then asks what those mean and asks the student, what about these paragraphs? And the student repeats the same four lines. I prefer to think that that's a case of laziness, Steve. Nitwit Nero is simply stupid. Correction from Megan. It's Maryland, damn it. Hey, Sailor says, yes, we warsh every day. W-O-R-S-H. I love those little nuances of American speech. It rained rather steadily a week or so back. And Agnes will always remind me of something that she found delightful when we first started going down Alabama. The clouds pile up, then you hear the distant thunder. And our neighbor would say, well, it's a coming up a cloud. There's a richness to that kind of stuff. With his hands over his eyes, Silent R. Lamar says, where's the little kid to wish Trump into the cornfield? Yeah. There's a lot of where are they when you need them.
We have the best.
As a take a look. Okay. Again, it's cases.
Okay.
And we have cases because of the district.
A thousand Americans are dying a day. But I understand. I understand on cases, it's different.
No, but you're not reporting it correctly, Jonathan.
I think.
Oh, Jonathan, you're not reporting it correctly because. Oh, God.
I am, but.
If you take a look at this other chart, look. This is our testing, I believe. This is the testing, yeah.
Yeah, we do more tests.
No, wait a minute. Well, don't we get credit for that? And because we do more tests, we have more cases.
The unassailability of the logic. Four, given the proposition that all fish live underwater, and all mackerel are fish, my wife will conclude not that all mackerel live underwater, but that trout live in trees, or that if she buys kippers, it will not rain, or even that I do not love her anymore. This she calls using her intuition. I call it crap, and it gets me very irritated because it is not logical. More Monty Python. Sorry. But that's it. That's it. At any moment, he's liable to declare, you know, all fish live underwater and all mackerel are fish. No, trout live in trees. But what about the testing? The testing. The testing that is damnably difficult to get. The testing that takes a week or more to get results back so that there's no realistic way to contact trace. But we don't want to contact trace anyway, because that might violate somebody's liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Freedom! It's in the Constitution. You can't contact trace me. Correction. Trump speaking. Scott in San Diego says, it's vividly apparent that his brain circuitry no longer utilizes neurons. Now all of the strange and wonderful impulses travel from spirochete to spirochete. Aha, yes. P.S. My first wife was from a town in southwest Missouri called N-E-V-A-D-A. But no, it wasn't pronounced like that. It was Nevada. I'm familiar with Nevada, Missouri.
Why don't we get credit for the testing? I want extra credit.
Honest to God, he is Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys with an added dose of malevolence and maliciousness.
In other words, we test more. We have now take a look. The top one, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. The top, Jonathan.
If hospital rates were going down and deaths were going down, I'd say terrific. You deserve to be praised for testing, but they're all going up.
You know, they very rarely talk.
60,000 Americans are in hospital.
If you watch the news or read the papers, they usually talk about new cases.
I'm talking about death.
Well, you look at death. It's going up. Death is way down from where it was.
It's 1,000 a day. It was 2,500. It went down to 500. Now it's going up again.
Excuse me, where it was is much higher than where it is right now.
It went down and it went up again.
But now it's going down again. It's going down in Arizona. It's going down in Florida.
Nationally,
it's going down in Texas.
And remember, as James reminds us, slow the testing down, please. Yeah. He's told us all along what he's doing. I think a lot of this, there's some cognitive dissonance on our part, where we refuse to get on board with Maya Angelou to the extent that when someone tells you who they are, believe them. He's told us who he is all along. And there are far too many of us, I don't think necessarily in this little community, but there are far too many of us who go, no, I mean, look at the multimillionaires of the for-profit media. Those cosseted darlings. Oh, look, he's turned a corner. He's being presidential. Pity's sake. Uh-oh. I've pushed Brother Deacon Asa right up to the edge. Hold the fuck on for a second. Deaths as a fraction of cases is a far higher number than deaths as a fraction of total population. Why is that moron insisting on publishing the former?
Hey, I know. Yeah, I know.
Going back to the shit show, Todd earlier noted, the blonde bummer sounds a tad disinterested in the dangerous weather and repercussions. Could it be preoccupied with something else? Oh, yes, he's preoccupied with something else. He's preoccupied with the fact that his bad lawyers went into court recently in Manhattan and argued with Cyrus Vance Jr. that the subpoena for the Mazars tax information was overbroad because they were only, you know, and they made this argument, they were, because Cyrus Vance was only looking into hush money payments. To which Cyrus Vance, or his subordinate there in the Manhattan DA's office said, au contraire, mi amigo, we're looking at patterns of fraud going back years. And the judge had already viewed in camera, that means that the judge gets a look at it all by the judge's lonesome self, got a look at the prosecutor's investigation. And no, it's not just about hush money payments, although his presence in that investigation what resulted in him being listed as an unnamed co-conspirator to Michael Cohen on two felonies that could wind up being four felonies for Nitwit Nero. That's federal. This is state. Jeremy notes, whatever this fuck says, you can bet your fucking life it's the opposite. Precisely. Everything he does, everything he says, is projection. I did not see that segment. Jack mentioned, and Shreveport mentions a segment on Our Filthy Morning Habit. I was watching it on and off with other channels, but I happened to catch Joe talking to his guest, Stuart Stevens, with his book, It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. This is not a book about how Donald J. Trump hijacked the Republican Party and changed it into something else. Stevens shows how Trump is, in fact, the natural outcome of 5 decades of hypocrisy and self-delusion, dating all the way back to the civil rights legislation of the early 1960s. Stuart Stevens shows how racism has always lurked in the modern GOP's DNA, from Goldwater's opposition to desegregation to Ronald Reagan's welfare queens and states' rights rhetoric. He gives an insider's account of the rank hypocrisy of the party's claims to embody family values, and shows how the party's vaunted commitment to fiscal responsibility has been a charade since the 1980s. When a party stands for nothing, he argues it is only natural that it will be taken over by the loudest and angriest voices in the room. Anyway, Jack notes, the Morning Joe crew was beside themselves, exclaiming how the Republican Party's been a big piece of crap for a long time. Did you see any of that? They can't ever seem to see the light soon enough to ever do any good. And, of course, they're late to the party. Way late to the party. Because we've known this for eons. George W. Bush was not the disease. He was merely a symptom. Julius Geezer is not the disease. He's just an even bigger symptom. But at least we know that. There was another clip making the rounds. In this case, Jonathan Swan asks Corona Caligula about the late great John Lewis.
John Lewis is lying in state in the U.S. Capitol. How do you think history will remember John Lewis?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know John Lewis. He chose not to come to my inauguration.
So there's another minute and 19 seconds to the clip, but we can stop right there for a moment. All you have to do to prove yourself a decent human being is say, John Lewis was a great man who dedicated his life to his country. But this two-legged turd is incapable of that. His brain is so fucked up that he can't even behave with basic, common human decency. Even in the smallest amount. I've referred to him time after time as a jiggling adipose wad of grievances, petty jealousies, vanities. And there's the proof. He didn't come to my inauguration. Like what? Nitwit Nero was standing there taking the tickets? Okay. You're checked off on my naughty or nice list. You're nice. You're nice. Oh, where's John Lewis? Naughty. He didn't come to my inauguration.
John Lewis is lying in state in the U.S. Capitol. How do you think history will remember John Lewis?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know.
He doesn't know because he doesn't know because he doesn't know. He says, I don't know 3 times. Kind of like Peter denying Christ 3 times before the cock crowed. Does he not know because he's a moron? Or maybe he doesn't know because he's the son of a Klansman. Maybe he can't admit to himself that the civil rights struggle to which John Lewis dedicated his life was a worthy undertaking. Maybe as far as he sees it, what John Lewis stood for and near died for made his evil old Klansman daddy sad. Because his evil old Klansman daddy then got busted for racist landlord-tenant practices. How they would, with their shitty apartments, they would mark an application C for colored. There's a whole lot of content behind that don't know. Now, I mean, yeah, maybe if you're under 30, you had to learn about John Lewis. Or maybe if you're a member of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade, and you think history begins with you, you don't know the extent to which John Lewis gave his life, all his life. You know, maybe you're butt hurt because John Lewis endorsed Hillary in 2016 instead of Bernie. There appear to be a good number of those people. But I'd say if you're 40 or above, there's no reason not to know the breadth and depth and extent of the magnificence of the life of John Lewis. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Why three times?
I think history will remember John Lewis.
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know John Lewis. He chose not to come to my inauguration. He chose... I never met John Lewis, actually. I don't believe.
Do you find him impressive?
I can't say one way or the other. I find a lot of people impressive. I find many people not impressive. But
you find yourself impressive, although nobody, you never put yourself in a position to be damn near beaten to death for the rights of your fellow Americans. No one in your sickening, miserable family has ever come anywhere near the ultimate sacrifice for the privilege of citizenship in this country. Your granddaddy was a pimp. Your mother was an illegal immigrant. Gold digger, for lack of a better term. She came over here from that wee tiny island in Scotland where the gene pool was about as deep as a muddy hoof print. And on her documentation, it said that she was coming over on a vacation. But as quick as Mary. Oh, what was her name? The same as the Highlander. There can be only one. MacLeod. As soon as Mary MacLeod got here, suddenly she wasn't on a vacation anymore. And instead, she was a-looking for work. And pretty much any work she could find. And she found work as a maid. And that's when she met Fred Trump, who apparently had a thing for stooping the help. And out of that, a racist and a cheat, we get Donald J. Trump. History. It's a thing. Lee in New York says, John Lewis, he knows that John Lewis did not attend his inauguration because everyone wanted to be there. Did not offer to praise Donald. Did nothing that Trump cares about. Precisely. Jimmy simply noting he doesn't know because he doesn't care. James in Illinois says,
I don't know.
He was really struggling with the urge to say, fuck John Lewis. He was mean to me. Anything that John Lewis did was outside his purview. He wasn't interested in civil rights. I think he was actively opposed to them, but never mind. He lived to walk backstage at his pageant because he owned those girls, as he would likely claim.
I get to walk back there. I walk in there. There's all these beautiful, beautiful young girls, and they're nearly naked, or some of them are naked, and I get to do that because I own the pageant.
They were his girls, and he could look at them as he pleased, and if no one was looking, he'd grab them any way he wanted.
Because you can do that when you're a star.
Jeremy says, easy on the Highlander clan, Bob. Duncan was a decent person on the show, and he eventually lost his head for it. I was thinking of Connor McLeod. But, yeah. Maybe it's a different branch. Like I said, way up on a little island. Not a particularly nice place either, as far as I can tell. All right, there's more of this. It just won't end.
But, no, but I didn't
go. Did you find his story impressive?
He didn't come to my inauguration. He didn't come to my State of the Union speeches. And that's okay. That's his right. And, again, nobody has done more for black Americans than I have.
I understand.
Whoa, there it is again. Nobody.
He should have come. But I think he made a big mistake.
Taking your relationship with him out of it, do you find his story impressive, what he's done for this country?
He was a person that devoted a lot of energy and a lot of heart to civil rights, but there were many others also.
Very fine people on both sides, right? Yeah.
There were many others also. I'm a big Stokely Carmichael fan myself.
No. Something never said. Not hardly. Back to Nitwit Nero's mama. Jeremy says, the Isle of Skye, my family came from there as well. No. She comes from a little village called Tong on the Isle of Lewis and was born there in 1912. Sparky says he did not know because he grew up in a house that did not watch Walter Cronkite. Dear God, what did they watch? Ugh.
There's a petition to rename the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, as the John Lewis Bridge. Would you support that idea?
I would have no objection to it if they'd like to do it.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Would have no objection to it whatsoever.
Okay.
Because he's giving permission. I would have no objection. But that's not the same thing as I support that. Let's see here. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut, an update. Subject line, massive damage across Connecticut from Isaias. The utilities company in my neck of the woods, Eversource, is trying to keep us up to date as their texting platform failed, so they had to do the robocall. This is because they were reamed a new asshole by the previous Democratic governor due to their and the other electrical company in Southern Connecticut's massive failures from the Halloween snowstorm many years ago that caused outages that lasted as long as 2 weeks. Wasn't that Sandy, Darlene? It was literally the year without a Halloween. The damage was massive, widespread. You couldn't even get gas. I became extremely ill then, as I had been too cold to the bone for 4 days. I hosted other family members at my house who didn't get power back for 9 days plus. I was too ill to enjoy them, though, and had other family members managing my house and my guests while I slept, but I digress. No, I'll continue to digress. So it begs the damned question. Shouldn't our electrical grid be managed by government-supported nonprofits as opposed to for-profit tiers? Asking for a goddamn friend, as I'm still getting closer to being in the dark with the sunset a little after 8 p.m. now. Oh, I share your disgust, your frustration, your anger, your fury, Darlene. You've been listening to this program for a long time, and you know that every time a cloud shows up in the sky, I have to give a warning that the program may disappear without warning, because our rickety old coal-fired, for-profit, coal-fried, antiquated power grid can hardly withstand a strong wind, let alone a tornado, or in the case of 2012, a derecho. I know what those two-week power outages are like. In fact, that probably comes as close to what we're going through now, only what we're going through now is much longer. And while you can get ice and gasoline and life has a patina of normalcy, there's that underlying stress. And I remember how the community helped me to be able to go out and buy a generator so we could have some electricity back during those 2 weeks. It was no help in getting the internet on, because it was down at the source. But we managed to run a small refrigerator, because that was when the old one got killed. And we were able to drive around and find gasoline here and there to run the generator. And we would run the automobile with the air conditioner on and use it as a cooling station and a charging station for our devices. So the answer to your question, Darlene, is yes. There should be no for-profit utilities. There should be no for-profit power companies, no for-profit gas companies, no for-profit water utilities. It should all be run by the people who are affected by the success or failure of those utilities. Because when they're run for profit, that means there's shareholders to take care of, and that means that the shareholders get taken care of before the customers do. Now, states set up public service commissions or something similarly named, but in most states, no sooner had that been done than the utilities made it so that the utilities would take them over as captives by having the lion's share of the say-so in who the members of the commission were. And so it is functionally ineffective. So that's just another thing to add to the list. And of course, there's always the question of how much of your grid, Darlene, is coal-fried, how much of it's hydroelectric, how much of it's wind, how much of it's solar, how much of it is frack gas, how much of it nuclear. And therein you will see an answer to a lot of your questions as well. Okay, the Halloween nor'easter was 2011. That wasn't Sandy. Okay. because Sandy came along in 2012, because it was, I think, 3 months to the day after the damn derecho. Oh, hey, I forgot, says Megan. I finished Mary Trump's book. Anyone who hasn't read it, read it. But here's a summary of how COVID Caligula came to be. Fred Trump Sr. was a textbook sociopath, meaning he didn't feel the normal emotions a normal human would have, and empathy for another is nil. He pressured his oldest son, Fred Jr., into being like him, but because Fred Jr. had the normal emotional spectrum, this meant he failed at everything demanded of him by his father. And Fred Sr. responded by ridiculing him so severely, publicly and often, in front of his family, that this most likely resulted in Fred Jr.'s drinking problem later in life. Enter our current problem, Mad King Donald. Donnie, who grew up without a mother due to her health problems and hospitalization in Donnie's life, also witnessed Fred Sr.'s humiliation of Fred Jr. on a daily basis. Mad King Donnie decided early on to win Daddy's favor by mirroring what Fred Sr. admired. That meant bullying his younger brother Robert so often and so badly that Fred Jr. had to throw a plate of mashed potatoes at him in order to get him to stop, something he nurses a grudge for to this day. His mother even said she couldn't deal with him and was relieved when he was packed off to military school, which, by the way, he had to be sent to because he bullied his classmates so badly, coupled with no discipline at home, became such a big problem at home that Fred Sr. had no other option but to deal with it, something he really didn't want to do in the first place. Fred Sr., that shining, lovely example of a father, encouraged Mad King Donnie's behavior because he thought it was funny. He even admired it to some degree because it was exactly the opposite of what Fred Jr. did. Worse, he favored Donald as a snub to Fred Jr., so it was also a way of punishing him for the sin of Fred Jr. leaving the family company and pursuing being a TWA pilot. And if that weren't fucked up enough, Fred Sr. never got over the slight and continued to encourage Donald in his deplorable bad behavior. Because, get this, while Fred Sr. was a fairly good businessman, albeit heartless as fuck, he had none of the charisma, extroversion, or charm with other people that little Donnie had. Fred Sr. actually failed the Dale Carnegie public speaking course, and thus loved the fact that Donnie could bullshit with the best of them, continuing to favor him above literally everyone else in his family, promoting him as president of the Trump Management Company over Fred Jr., yes, you read that right, to further humiliate him. That included ignoring all of Donnie's ignorant business sense, bailing him out of all of his failures, and ignoring the stories little Donnie put out of himself as the self-made businessman. So if you were wondering how we got here, you got the parents to thank. Which is reminiscent of something that a fella who taught our kids in middle school used to say on the regular. He's long since gone. Good man. But he was cranky in class, and he brooked no bullshit. And he'd say, "It all begins in the home. It all begins in the home." And indeed, as Megan has pointed out, it does. Presidential obligations. Lee in New York says whether they want to or not, most presidents are aware of going to the places and events that require their attendance as necessary participation. The death of a member of Congress requires an expression of condolence from POTUS. It does not have to be heartfelt. It does not have to be sincere. It needs to be offered. But the golfing glob could not find an opening in his schedule. Is he supposed to disappoint three living people because of a dead person? Dead people do not golf. So truly, and you know what? Look, not wishing anything on anybody, but if it should happen that Louis Asparagus Gohmert goes to his long home as a result of COVID-19, Nitwit Nero will fall all over himself with expressions of condolence and grief. Don't you think? Now, Louis Asparagus Gohmert has never done a damn thing with his life except try to use it to make other people miserable. In that to that extent, he is very like his hero, Nitwit Nero. Gohmert's own daughter, on the other hand, put out a public statement on Twitter saying that her father had ignorantly followed Donald Trump and thereby gotten the Rona. She goes by the performance name Bell Saint. And she said, I wish my father would have followed science instead, rather than potentially following Donald Trump and winding up in a grave. She went on to say, I love my father and I do not want him to die. She's correct. Absolutely correct. And as we come to the end of the program, I would be remiss if I did not note what happened in Beirut today. That poor city. That poor, tormented city. Once known as the Paris of the Levant. Today had a massive explosion. The officially cited excuse was that a warehouse full of firecrackers exploded. And then the story was changed to confiscated explosives. Whatever it was hell on earth. It made what happened on September 11th, 2001, in terms of the scope and the size of the explosion, look minuscule by comparison. People at a considerable, as in miles away distance from the site of the explosion, ran to their balconies and turned on their phones to take video of it. And what you see in the video looks like special effects from some CGI dystopian action thriller movie, whatever. You can see and hear the progress of the shockwave as it rolls across the city. The thing I immediately thought of was that Bruce Willis vehicle, Armageddon, when the meteors first strike Earth, and you see the wave of destruction just roll across. Hundreds are injured, homeless. The New York Times reporting at least 78 people are dead. 4,000 are injured. And the numbers are still going up. Curiously, one of the political parties in Lebanon, Nizar Najarian, was killed in the blast. The chairman of the state-owned electrical company, Kamal Hayek, was injured and in critical condition. The blast punched holes and walls in furniture. It all took place down at the port area of Beirut. And the Red Cross in Lebanon said every ambulance available from North Lebanon, the Bekaa, and South Lebanon were dispatched to Beirut to help. Wounded people turned away at hospitals because of the complete inundation of capacity. Public Health Minister Hamad Hassan said that the Ministry of Public Health would cover the costs of treating the wounded at hospitals. Took no time at all to say that. And begin doing it. Compare that to the United States, where people still don't know what will happen. Millions, tens of millions of Americans still don't know what will happen if they get COVID-19. It is being said that a large cache of explosive materials seized by the government years ago was stored where the explosion took place. And among other things, what was stored there was the same sort of explosives they use to blow up southern West Virginia and poison innocent victims of the coal industry, namely ammonium nitrate. You might recall an ammonium nitrate fertilizer factory blew up in West Texas some years back. You might recall that ammonium nitrate was fuel oil was what Timothy McVeigh used to blow up the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City in 1995. Killed 168 people, including children. And there seems to be some indication that this was not an accident. Prime Minister Diab was quoted by the Lebanese Higher Defense Council as saying, "I will not relax until we find the responsible party for what happened, hold it accountable, and apply the most serious punishments against it, because it is not acceptable that a shipment of ammonium nitrate, estimated to be 2,750 tons, was in a depot for the past 6 years without precautionary measures being taken." Now, always fanning the flames, Nitwit Nero said,
The generals seem to think it was an attack. It was a bomb of some kind.
And forgive me, but anytime I see something like that, I wonder who was up to what. Because there are bad actors in the region. So here, then, is the sound. Dear God. Jeremy points out people felt that explosion 150 kilometers away. Also, if you ever watch some of our nuclear test sites on old Navy fleets in the 50s, some of them were not as large looking as today's conventional explosion, which killed hundreds instantly. Probably not from the explosion and debris, but from the pressure wave it created. It would have liquefied them. As to Trump, his parentage, and the pathologies of his existence. Darlene in Connecticut says, can you imagine if Trump's parents were still alive? Oh, would Trump be able to prove to them that he was actually a worthy son? He was elected president. But they're long gone. So that's why he's looking for a mommy and a daddy and others like Vladimir Putin until recently.
Deborah.
In the words of the magnificent Sandra, oh, snap. Yes. And so we come to the end of the program. Fundraising goal for tomorrow will stand at $380. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy and, $390. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy and Renee for jumping in this evening. Thank you most kindly indeed. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky and Steve. I didn't notice that Steve had come in. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 years, 20 plus years, at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. There is a madman who does not care whether you live or die. Actually, if you're a Democrat, he prefers you die. In the White House. His followers are bioterrorists. And they can kill with a single breath. So if you can stay home, stay home. If you have to go out, if you have to work, then by all means, please wear your mask. Please wash your hands frequently. Carry hand sanitizer everywhere you go. Practice social distancing. Be aware of your circumstances and surroundings at all times. And if you see somebody hooting and hollering about freedom or liberty or it's in the Constitution or Trump's going to beat the Chinese flu, avoid them like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.